Appendices. The Adiran Culture War. The following three passages have been extracted from a short history of the Adiran War. English language, Christian calendar version, original text AD 2110, unaltered. Edited by Parharan Gaiza, Listach Jaandizi, Petrain Dam Kotosklo. The work forms part of an independent, non-commissioned but contact-approved Earth Extra Information Pack. Reasons. The culture. It was, the culture knew from the start, a religious war in the fullest sense. The culture went to war to safeguard its own peace of mind, no more. But that peace was the culture's most precious quality, perhaps its only true and treasured possession. In practice, as well as theory, the culture was beyond considerations of wealth or empire. The very concept of money, regarded by the culture as a crude, overcomplicated and inefficient form of rationing, was irrelevant within the society itself, where the capacity of its means of production ubiquitously and comprehensively exceeded every reasonable, and in some cases perhaps unreasonable, demand its not unimaginative citizens could make. These demands were satisfied, with one exception, from within the culture itself. Living space was provided in abundance, chiefly on matter-cheap orbitals. Raw material existed in virtually inexhaustible quantities, both between the stars and within stellar systems, and energy was, if anything, even more generally available through fusion, annihilation, the grid itself, or from stars, taken either indirectly as radiation absorbed in space or directly tapped at the stellar core. Thus, the culture had no need to colonize, exploit, or enslave. The only desire the culture could not satisfy from within itself was one common to both the descendants of its original human stock and the machines they had, at however great a remove, brought into being: the urge not to feel useless. The culture's sole justification for the relatively unworried, hedonistic life its population enjoyed was its good works, the secular evangelism of the contact section, not simply finding, cataloguing, investigating and analysing other, less advanced civilizations, but, where the circumstances appeared to contact to justify so doing, actually interfering, overtly or covertly, in the historical processes of those other cultures. With a sort of apologetic smugness, contact, and therefore the culture, could prove statistically that such careful and benign use of the technology of compassion, to use a phrase in vogue at the time, did work, in the sense that the techniques it had developed to influence a civilization's progress did significantly improve the quality of life of its members, without harming that society as a whole by its very contact with a more advanced culture. Faced with a religiously inspired society determined to extend its influence over every technologically inferior civilization in its path, regardless of either the initial toll of conquest or the subsequent attrition of occupation, contact could either disengage and admit defeat, so giving the lie not simply to its own reason for existence but to the only justificatory action which allowed the pampered, self-consciously fortunate people of the culture to enjoy their lives with a clear conscience, or it could fight. Having prepared and steeled itself, and popular opinion, through decades of the former, it resorted eventually, inevitably, like virtually any organism whose existence is threatened, to the latter. For all the culture's profoundly materialist and utilitarian outlook, the fact that Idia had no designs on any physical part of the culture itself was irrelevant. Indirectly, but definitely and mortally, the culture was threatened, not with conquest or loss of life, craft, resource or territory, but with something more important: the loss of its purpose and that clarity of conscience, the destruction of its spirit, the surrender of its soul. Despite all appearances to the contrary, the culture, not the Adirans, had to fight, and in that necessity of desperation eventually gathered a strength which, even if any real doubt had been entertained as to the eventual result, could brook no compromise. Reasons. The Adirans. The Adirans were already at war, conquering the species they regarded as inferior and subjugating them in a primarily religious empire which was only incidentally a commercial one as well. It was clear to them from the start that their jihad to calm, integrate and instruct these other species and bring them under the direct eye of their god had to continue and expand or be meaningless. A halt or moratorium, while possibly making at least as much sense as continued expansion in military, commercial and administrative terms, would negate such militant hegemonization as a religious concept. Zeal outranked and outshone pragmatism. As with the culture, it was the principle which mattered. The war, long before it was finally declared, was regarded by the Adiran High Command as a continuation of the permanent hostilities demanded by theological and disciplinary colonisation, involving a quantitative and qualitative escalation of armed conflict of only a limited degree to cope with the relatively equivalent technological expertise of the culture. While the Adirans universally assumed that having made their point, the people in the culture would back down, a few of the Adiran policymakers anticipated that, should the culture prove as determined as a worst possible scenario projected, a politically judicious settlement might be arrived at which would save face and have advantages for both sides. This would involve a pact or treaty in which the Adirans would effectively agree to slow or limit their expansion for a time, thus allowing the culture to claim some, but not too much, success, and provide the Adirans with a religiously justifiable excuse for consolidation, which would both let the Adiran military machine draw breath and cut the ground from beneath those Adirans who objected to the rate and cruelty of Adiran expansion, and b, a further reason for an increase in military expenditure to guarantee that in the next confrontation the culture, or any other opponent, could be decisively outarmed and destroyed. Only the most fervent and fanatical sections of Adiran society urged or even contemplated a war to the finish, and even so, merely counselled continuing the fight against the culture after, and despite the backdown, an attempt to sue for peace, which they too believed the culture must inevitably make. Having drawn up these no-lose formulations of the likely course of events, the Adirans joined battle with the culture without qualm or hesitation. At worst, they perhaps considered that the war was being begun in an atmosphere of mutual incomprehension. They could not have envisaged that while they were understood almost too perfectly by their enemy, they had comprehensively misapprehended the forces of belief, need, even fear, and morale operating within the culture. The War, briefly. The first Adiran culture dispute occurred in AD 1267, the second in 1288. In 1289, the culture built its first genuine warship for 5 centuries, in prototype form only. The official excuse was that the generations of mine-generated warship models the culture had kept in development had evolved so far from the last warcraft actually built that it was necessary to test the match of theory and practice. In 1307, the third dispute resulted in machine fatalities. War was publicly discussed in the culture as a likelihood for the first time. In 1310, the peace section of the culture split from the majority population, while the Ankrumin Pit Conference resulted in the agreed withdrawal of forces, a move which the more short-sighted adherents and culture citizens respectively condemned and acclaimed. The fourth dispute began in 1323 and continued, with the culture using proxy forces, until 1327, when the war officially began and culture craft and personnel were directly involved. The culture's war council of 1326 resulted in several other parts of the culture splitting away, renouncing the use of violence under any circumstances. The Adiran culture war conduct agreement was ratified in 1327. In 1332, the Hamomda joined the war on the Adiran side. The Hamomda, another tripedal species of greater galactic maturity than either the culture or the Adirans, had sheltered the Adirans who had made up holy remnants during the Second Great Exile, 1345 to 991 BC, following the Skankatrian-Adiran War. The remnants and their descendants became the Hamomdan's most trusted crack ground troops, and following the Adiran surprise return and retaking of Idir in 990 BC, the two tripedal species continued to cooperate on terms that came closer to equality as Adiran power increased. The Hamomda joined with the Adirans because they distrusted the growing power of the culture. They were far from alone in having this feeling, though unique in acting on it overtly. While having relatively few disagreements with the humans, and none of them serious, it had been Hamomdan policy for many tens of thousands of years to attempt to prevent any one group in the galaxy, on their technological level, from becoming overstrong, a point they decided the culture was then approaching. The Hamomda at no point devoted all their resources to the Adiran cause. They used part of their powerful and efficient space fleet to fill the gaps of quality left in the Adiran navy. It was made clear to the culture that if the humans attacked Hamomdan home planets, only then would the war become total. Indeed, limited diplomatic and cultural relations were maintained, and some trade continued between the Hamomda and the culture throughout the war. Miscalculations. The Adirans thought they could win alone, and so, with Hamomdan support, assumed they would be invincible. The Hamomda thought their influence would tip the balance in the Adiran's favour, though would never have been prepared to risk their own future to defeat the culture anyway. and the culture minds had guessed that the Hamomda would not join with the adherents. Calculations concerning the war's duration, cost and benefits had been made on this assumption. During the war's first phase, the culture spent most of its time falling back from the rapidly expanding adherent sphere, completing its war production changeover and building up its fleet of warships. For those first few years, the war in space was effectively fought on the culture side by its general contact units, not designed as warships, but sufficiently well-armed and more than fast enough to be a match for the average adherent ship. In addition, the culture's field technology had always been ahead of the adherents, giving the GCUs a decisive advantage in terms of damage avoidance and resistance. These differences, to some extent, reflected the two sides' general outlooks. To the adherents, a ship was a way of getting from one planet to another, or for defending planets. To the culture, a ship was an exercise in skill, almost a work of art. The GCUs, and the warcraft which gradually replaced them, were created with a combination of enthusiastic flair and machine-oriented practicality the adherents had no answer to. Even if the culture craft themselves were never quite a match for the better Hamomdan ships, for those first years, nevertheless, the GCUs were vastly outnumbered. That opening stage also saw some of the war's heaviest losses of life, when the adherents surprise-attacked many war-irrelevant culture orbitals, occasionally producing billions of deaths at a time. As a shock tactic, this failed. As a military strategy, it deflected even more resources from the already stretched Adiran Navy's main battle groups, which were experiencing great difficulty in finding and successfully attacking the distant culture orbitals, rocks, factory craft and general systems vehicles, which were responsible for producing the culture's material. At the same time, the Adirans were attempting to control the vast volumes of space and the large numbers of usually reluctant and often rebellious lesser civilizations the culture's retreat had left at their mercy. In 1333, the War Conduct Agreement was amended to forbid the destruction of populated, non-military habitats, and the conflict continued in a marginally more restrained fashion until near the end. The war entered its second phase in 1335. The Adirans were still struggling to consolidate their gains. The culture was finally on a war footing. A period of protracted struggle ensued as the culture struck deep into the Adiran sphere, and Adiran policy oscillated between trying to defend what they had and build up their strength and mounting powerful but defence-weakening expeditions into the rest of the galaxy, attempting to inflict hoped-for body blows upon a foe which proved frustratingly elusive. The culture was able to use almost the entire galaxy to hide in. Its whole existence was mobile in essence. Even orbitals could be shifted, or simply abandoned. Populations moved. The Adirans were religiously committed to taking and holding all they could, to maintaining frontiers, to securing planets and moons. Above all, to keeping Idir safe at any price. Despite Hamomdan recommendations, the Adirans refused to fall back to more rational and easily defended volumes, or even to discuss peace. The war to'd and fro'd for over 30 years, with many battles, pauses, attempts to promote peace by outsiders and the Hamomda, great campaigns, successes, failures, famous victories, tragic mistakes, heroic actions, and the taking and retaking of huge volumes of space and numbers of stellar systems. After 3 decades, however, the Hamomda had had enough. The Adirans made as intransigent allies as they had obedient mercenaries, and the culture ships were exacting too high a toll on the prized Hamomdan space fleet. The Hamomda requested and received certain guarantees from the culture and disengaged from the war. From that point on, only the Adirans sought the eventual result much in question. The culture had grown to enormous strength during the struggle and accumulated sufficient experience in those 30 years, to add to all the vicarious experience it had collected over the previous few thousand, to rob the Adirans of any real or perceived advantage in cunning, guile or ruthlessness. The war in space effectively ended in 1367, and the war on the thousands of planets left to the Adirans, conducted mostly with machines on the culture side, officially terminated in 1375. Though small sporadic engagements on backwater planets conducted by Adiran and Medjel forces, ignorant or scornful of the peace, continued for almost 3 centuries. Idir was never attacked, and technically never surrendered. Its computer network was taken over by effector weapons and, freed of designed-in limitations, upgraded itself to sentience to become a culture mind in all but name. Of the Adirans, some killed themselves, while others went into exile with the Hamomda, who agreed to employ them but refused to help them prepare for further strikes against the culture, or set up independent, nominally non-military habitats within other spheres of influence, under the culture's eye, or set off in escaped ships for little-known parts of the clouds, or for Andromeda, or accepted the victors. A few even joined the culture, and some became culture mercenaries. Statistics. Length of war, 48 years, 1 month. Total casualties, including machines, reckoned on logarithmic sentient scale, Megel and non-combatants, 851.4 billion, plus or minus 0.3%. Losses. Ships, all classes above interplanetary. 91,215,660, plus or minus 200. Orbitals, 14,334. Planets and major moons, 53. Rings, 1. Spheres, 3. Stars, undergoing significant induced mass loss or sequence position alteration, 6. Historical perspective. A small short war that rarely extended throughout more than 0.02% of the galaxy by volume and 0.01% by stellar population. Rumours persist of far more impressive conflicts stretching through vastly greater amounts of time and space. Nevertheless, the chronicles of the galaxy's elder civilizations rate the Adiran culture war as the most significant conflict of the past 50,000 years, and one of those singularly interesting events they see so rarely these days.